I thank Stephen and Shira for speaking in negative time, because the Shira is scheduled to begin at 2:15. I think to finish at 2:15. I had a hergish, I had a feeling this morning while we were davening, and I was thinking that this is a tremendous tefillah to be davening together with people that take such responsibility for Kadosh Baruch Hu's children. I mean, what kind of a tefillah is that? That in one room, we could turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, these are the Nesei Amcha. These are the people we speak about in the beginning of a Midbar, the people who count every single Jew. That's what a Nasi is. And I found that inspiring. And I think that being here, joining with you, being able to daven with you, to listen with you, to learn with you, I think that from a faculty perspective, we don't not only find it inspiring, but it empowers us to speak to our Talmidim, to speak to our students, knowing that they will find partners in the teaching of Torah, and they'll find very fertile ground in which they can express their mission. That is a source of great encouragement that I take back, and I'm sure all of my colleagues take back as well. I'm grateful to my Brander for including me in this convocation, this conference. I'm very grateful to Richard Joel for inviting me here, and I join all of us in being grateful to the Mister family for bringing this opportunity together to hear each other, listen to each other, learn from each other, and inspire each other. The shiur that we are scheduled to give a shiur now for about half an hour, so we'll have the zechus of listening to Dr. Elman as well. My Brander told me that it would be a half hour shiur, so I thought in terms of it should be called the power shiur. You know, I think in the business world, there's something called the power nap. In the middle of the day, long day, a few hours at night. So this concept of you can sleep for just 20 minutes, the right time, the right place, is called the power nap. So this will be called the power shear. I hope you don't take your power naps during the power shear. But you know that we're all given to multitasking. So we have to. There's a Gemara at the beginning of Daf Chof Aleph in Baba Basra, which to begin with that text. I think that you'll find it all is very encouraging. And I think it gives us the context for our discussion about tuition. I'd like to learn the Gemara together with you. We have the sheets, Baba Basra Chof Aleph Amar Aleph. The second line, Omer of Yehuda Merav. Rav Yehuda says the name of Rav Biram Zachor Osoa Ish Latov Yeshua Ben Gamla Shemo. You got to know that Yeshua Ben Gamla accomplished a great thing for the Jewish people. This is the history of day schools, of Yeshivot Ktanot. You got to remember that Yeshua Ben Gamla, I think what the Gemara is saying, even though he became a Kohen Gadol, and even though he bought his way in to becoming a Kohen Gadol, his wife was able to secure the funds that he could become the Kohen Gadol. Nevertheless, he accomplished something that was tremendous. Zachar Oso Ish Latov. Klal Yisrael will forever be grateful to Yeshua ben Gamla. Shilmolehu Nishtakach Torah Yisrael. Because if not for Yeshua ben Gamla, Torah would not have endured. And he explains, and this should be very inspiring to all of us, because Yeshua ben Gamla began a day school. There are many of you who are in the position, if not beginning day schools, maintaining day schools, maintaining communities. And Klal Yisrael remembers Yeshua ben Gamla. What happened? Initially, before his time, Mi sheyesh lo av, melamda Torah. Mi she'ein lo av, lohoya lomei Torah. Before Yeshua ben Gamla, if a child was blessed with parents, you have to remember, life expectancy has gone up tremendously. We are blessed with the numbers we think of nowadays. But it was probably less than 2 centuries ago when life expectancy was in its 40s, Rahman al-Islam. So when you talk about a child without a parent, this was apparently, could have been commonplace. So a child that had a parent, they studied Torah. But I'm corrected. in the Gemara's time, was down to 30. So you can imagine, mi she'ein lo'av, and there were many children, many Yisomim, didn't have parents. Lo hayola meit, he didn't learn Torah. My darish, what was their context for this? Well, the Torah says, ulamadatem osam, ulamadatem atem. We say in Kriya Shema, you're obligated to teach your children. The obligation of teaching children Torah is one of the obligations that parents have for their children. Parents have obligations to teach Torah, obligations to provide a child with the wherewithal to earn a parnasa, obligations to marry off her children, all listed in the Mishnah Kiddushin. So one of these obligations is to teach Torah. There are many children who did not study Torah because there was no parent, no one taking responsibility. Hiskinu, so the rabbis made a rule, they legislated. Sheyuhu moshivin melamdei tinokos b'Yerushalayim. They said, we'll have schools, have a day school in Yerushalayim. My darush, what was their context? Ki mitzion teitzei sora. Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Yeshaya Navi says, Yerushalayim is the base and medrash of Klal Yisrael. So they made a school in Yerushalayim. If we have time, we can come back to discuss what were they thinking, how this would accomplish their goals. But the Gemara explained that the rabbis did not achieve what they wanted to achieve. Adayin mishayesh lo av, hoya ma'alo umilamdo, umishayin lo av, lo hoya olev alame. So listen to what happened. This is very encouraging for people in communal work. They made a school in Yerushalayim. I assume that the Yisomim of Yerushalayim, the orphans in Yerushalayim, studied Torah. What else happened? Well, anybody who lived in the area of Yerushalayim would now bring their children to Yerushalayim to learn in the day school. So what was happening is you create an institution, try to solve a problem. You solve the problem partially, but you'll always have people, call it a free ride, call it people who will take advantage of a system. So the rabbis looked around and they saw what happened over here. Well, they solved their problem in part, but at the same time, they compromised because there were many parents who were saying, there's a school in Yerushalayim, so now I can work full time, and I'll bring my children to Yerushalayim. So first of all, you see the experimentation of legislation goes back to the time of the Gemara. You see that there's a give and take. You see you can begin an institution and it will partially solve the problem. And that's okay because it's the step to figure out the next step. So what happened next? Hiskinu shimushivin b'chol plach u'plach. They said we have to have regional schools. We'll have schools in every area. Plach is like a large area. Well, if you have a regional school, that means you're bringing your children, sending them away from home. Probably there were dormitory schools. They're also very insightful. When was the earliest you can send a child away? In the time of the Gemara, when children, we assume, matured much quicker than now, 16 or 17. That's interesting, right? The Gemara says we couldn't set up a regional school for Yisomim, for orphans, until 16 or 17, sent away from their mother. So the Gemara says, what happens when you bring a child in who's never been in a day school, never sat by a desk, never listened to a Rebbe, until 16 or 17? What happened? Mishahoya rabo ko'esolov, mavit bo v'yotze. Is what happened? The Rebbe got upset with the child. The child wasn't learning so well. His child is a yosom. He's 16 or 17. He hasn't been disciplined. So sometimes the Rebbe has to discipline him. So what happens? Mavit v'yotze. He's 16 or 17. He rebels. He checks out. He can't begin education at 16 or 17. Ad shebo yeshuv in gamla. V'tiken yeshuv in gamla made a new legislation. And this is the focus. She yehu moishivin melamdei tinokos b'chol dinom dino b'chol ir v'ir. We begin schools in every single town, every single area. The Gemara says later on, 25 children, a school. Umachnisin oson keben sheish ukeben sheva. And we begin them in school at the age of 6 or 7. Omale Rav, Rav Shmuel bar Shilas, two very interesting comments. Rav told, this comes from Rav initially, so he expands on his philosophy of education. Ad shis lo tekabel. Until he's 6 years old, he's not going to learn. Mikan ve'elach, after the age of 6, kabil v'asvalei, take him in, bring him in, The asfale ketura and stuff him like an ox. A young child can learn a tremendous amount. In fact, I'll tell you a frightening Rambam. When the Rambam codifies this legislation of Yeshua ben Gamla, so he explains, especially at the end of August, this is frightening, he says, V'yoshev umelamden kol hayom, and they would teach the entire day, umiksas min alayla, and they would teach part of the night. That was the old day school. Right? Why daytime and nighttime? A child doesn't get used to learning both day and night. Lo yevadlu atinokos kalal. And these young children would only take off from school on Erev Shabbos afternoon and Erev Yom Tov afternoon and on Yom Tov itself. Even on Shabbos, Shabbos was review, was chazar. They didn't learn new in Shabbos. Right? I think you have trouble getting people into Jewish education nowadays. Imagine then, there was no summer break. There was a Yom Tov, and that was it. An Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov afternoon. It's frightening because the Gemara says that we could accomplish a tremendous amount. Again, our mechanchim believe nowadays that we could not do that in our present world. We have to adapt. The Gemara says, "Omulei Rav leRav Shmuel Bar Shilas." Another interesting piece of educational philosophy, kimochis liyanuka, when you have to strap a child, when you have to give a child a patch, lo timche, don't hit them only ba'arkasa dimisana, with a shoelace. You have to strap a child, take a shoelace. De ka'ari ka'ari, de loy ka'ari lavitzavsa l'chavre. If he listens, good. If he doesn't listen, get him better friends. Interesting idea. If the shoelace didn't work, find a better chevra. These are very important ideas. Let's focus on Yeshua ben Gamla. So Yeshua ben Gamla began the first idea of yeshiva ketana, of a day school, 6 or 7 local schools. What was the new innovation? What was the innovation of Yeshua ben Gamla? What did he really change? What would you say? What was the zocher asola tov? Was that for everybody? All right. Now, what else did he change? Was that every town? Okay. What else? What else is a major shift? Not primarily doing the father. Right. There's a tremendous shift of responsibility. Initially, b'tchila, it was the father. It was a father's responsibility. It was a family responsibility. Yeshua ben Gamla, the rabbis began to switch. Well, Yerushalayim, for 16 and 17 years old, but Yeshua ben Gamla said it becomes a communal responsibility. All right? That's the upshot, at least the initial reading. Would everybody accept that? Would anybody argue with that? That's not necessarily so, in terms of reading the Gemara.
Well, you accept that it's not ideally so, because it's never said that if the father can teach, it's not ideal. And in fact, this was promoted because there were so many kids who wouldn't have their father capable. So it doesn't seem to say that it's better to have a Rebbe teach the son than the father, but it sounds like it's making a communal policy, that there's something to be gained by gathering the students into schools, which is a different dynamic, and that's also buttressed by the fact that if the kid doesn't respond to the shoelace, get a better friend. It's acknowledging the dynamic of learning
as a group. So we have two, this is the way we learn in yeshiva. Now, there are two ways of looking at this Gemara. There was one way, the initial response was, it was an entire shift onto the community. The father was released from his responsibility. Right? The other way of looking at it was, no, this was a solution for Yisomim, for orphans. But if there was a father there, then the father would have the primary responsibility. Now, what is the major difference that results from the different ways of formulating this? Go ahead. So we'll come back to later on. I think what Steve is saying is very, very important. In other words, that in the Gemara's time, an orphan was a person who didn't have a father. It may very well be that in modern times we should view this as a metaphor, There are many children who have parents who are not so concerned about the child's education. Also a kind of a yosam. But look at it from the perspective of the interplay of the community and the parent. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I guess in terms of if school is ideally for orphans, then whether there's a financial, some other way you have to treat the people who want to get in who shouldn't be there.
Well, that's the, go ahead. In the situation of? Okay, so we'll come back to that in a moment. Go ahead. But let's go back to the response, the rabbinic response. Yeshua ben Gamla. All right? The rabbinic response was either, there are two ways of looking at it, either that the community sets up a school and send your children, right? Local parentis, all right? Or it was, we are providing a service for those who don't have parents. We will provide the same service for those who do have parents. But there's a major difference. Go ahead. Okay, and now let's talk about real tachlis, following up on that. Who pays, right? Who pays? Or how does one pay, right? If you take the approach that Yeshua ben Gamla set up a service, primarily for Yesomim, right? That means the responsibility of paying for the education was with the parents. Don't have parents, the community picks up the tab. Like they provide for all the needs of those who don't have the funding, right? But it's primarily a parental responsibility to pay for the education of their children. If you view it that there was a sea change, that Yeshua ben Gamla said, we are setting up communal schools, the community is going to now set up a school, then I am obligated as a member of my community to fund the school, and that obligation is a communal obligation, not necessarily a parental obligation. I mean, it's, as a parent, I send my child to the school. I pay for it as part of a community. You know, there are two different ways of looking at it. I have to be honest, when I read the Gemara, I assumed that Yeshua ben Gamla made an entirely new approach. Communal schools. When I presented this in shul once, they said, but Rabbi, that's the Catholic approach. Right? I said, that in and of itself doesn't mean that it's a problem, right? But that's what Yeshua ben Gamla established, according to one way of reading. That's how I read the Gemara. The Aruch HaShulchan says otherwise. Aruch HaShulchan was one of the great Rabbanim and decisors of the early part of the 20th century. He wrote a sefer, which is both a reference sefer and used by many as a source of practice as well. And the unique aspect of the Aruch HaShulchan is that he develops all the ideas from the Gemara. So the Aruch HaShulchan, when he explains this Gemara, he says, clearly what Yeshua ben Gamla did, he was not relieving parents of paying for their children's education. Parents have to pay their reim. They have to take care of the payroll. However, the community will pick up for the children who don't have parents. I read it differently. And when I did my research, I found that the first Lubavitcher, the Alter Rebbe, also read it differently. He read it that this was a communal institution. All right? Now this has, at first glance, it has a theoretical nafkamina, and that is who pays. All right, so do you pay as a parent, or do you pay as a... right, as a citizen. All right, but I think it has very significant ramifications practically for how you figure out scholarships. Right, you have to think about it. If when a parent comes to the school, the relationship is you are obligated to pay for your child's education. You're obligated to pay for tuition. Now the parent says, "But I can't afford it. Look at my, I have X number of children, I have X number of tuitions, and this is what I'm making," right? Doesn't add up. So now, how does the scholarship committee relate to this individual? What's the next part of the conversation? Was that? Right? How much can you pay? And what are you really saying? What can you do, right? Sometimes it might depend where you come from. Sometimes it's not such a nice, how much can you pay? Sometimes it's, we'll give you a form to fill out, and there's a scholarship request form, which is entirely certainly legitimate and necessary because you're handling communal funds. But what are you really saying to this individual? How much can you pay? And now there's a shortfall. Right. What do you need? And where is that money going to come from? It comes from the community. So really what's happening is we're moving into what we call Hilchos Tzaka. Right? Giving out communal funds to help those who need it. Right? So then we have rules how to give out Hilchos Tzaka. Right? And then the next step of the conversation, which sometimes becomes a little bit difficult, is, well, this is how much you think you should pay, but we have a scholarship committee that will evaluate how much we think you should pay. And these are all legitimate approaches. They have to always be done with great sensitivity and great concern, because people who are under financial stress in our society is a crazy, that means they're living under great stress. And to come to the Jewish community and ask for a scholarship, again, is a further stress. There has to be great sensitivity in how it's done. There has to be a tremendous balance between the responsibility towards communal funds and the needs of parents who really find it very, very difficult to request this kind of money, to request tzedakah money. Now the scholarship committee are gaboi tzedakah. They're individuals entrusted with communal funds. They have to be responsible to communal funds. They do it very seriously. But that's the relationship, all right? And if that's the case, so the committee certainly has the right and maybe even the responsibility to come to the parents and say, well, you know, are you taking a vacation? Are you taking a costly vacation? Right? I happen to think that taking a vacation, has become a necessity of life. If one lives a stressful life, I think a scholarship committee cannot come down hard on parents because they take a break. I think that's necessary. That's part of the needs of life. They can come down hard if they take a costly vacation. Right? The scholarship committee has the right to say, we think you can take a break for X number of days, and this amount should cost you. Right? Doing more than that. So we as gaboi tzedakah of the communal, of the community's funds, a person made a lavish bar mitzvah, lavish bas mitzvah. So I think the scholarship committee has a right to say, well, how can we justify giving communal funds if we think that you did something that was extravagant? Right? It's a difficult, it's a tremendous responsibility towards communal funds, and it requires great sensitivity towards individuals. I've sat down in our neighborhood with scholarship committees, and I was tremendously impressed. Because I always hear it from the parental perspective of the pressures they're under, of the invasion of privacy. And when I sat down with the scholarship committees, I was tremendously impressed with the sensitivity that they had, and that they were really doing their job with a tremendous measure of responsibility. But now there's another way of looking at it. All right? Let's say we look at it as a communal responsibility to have a school. Our community has to have a day school. All right? We provide the day school. Now, when a parent comes and says that I can't afford the tuition, so then what's the community saying? What's the conversation now? So we have responsibility. We have, as a community, have to fund the bill. We're coming to you as a parent because you're our first way of funding education. But if you can't come up with the funding of education, So we still have that responsibility. The conversation is a different conversation. We're not giving out stocker money now. We are figuring out, together with you, how we're going to fund the school. In that case, the scholarship committee, I think, has tremendous latitude as to how they evaluate how they want to give out their funds. They're not giving out stocker money. The person who's coming and applying for a scholarship is not coming and asking for money from the community. The person who's coming is saying, I have an obligation as a member of the community to help fund the communal school, and I can only fund it in a certain amount, to a certain extent. So the conversation and the inquiry and the exploration is different. In that case, the scholarship committee's role is very much how we set things up to begin with. We can, I think they have full reign. They can then say, well, in our community, we will allow for bar mitzvahs and bas mitzvahs of a certain, we will allow for vacations of a certain. It becomes a much different kind of conversation because it's not the giving out of communal funds. It's figuring out how to fund the community school. I think that's one. I think what Ms. Raska said before is also correct. There is, and this is in terms of education, there's going to be a difference of whether the parents are in local parentis or not. Right, that's for another discussion. Good. Any questions on what we presented? Anybody want to take this a step further on a practical matter before we have to close? Go ahead. Right, and so I think what you're saying is that's one model. I think that's the pshat in the Gemara. That was the Alter Rebbe's model, right? And the Aruch HaShulchan's model is very much the way that schools function presently. Right, we're seeing it as that parents have this obligation, and the school is responding to parental needs. Shalom bias.
$40,000 a student. And so when I run into someone who's a mega millionaire who tells me how happy they are that their grandchildren are in Gris this year, and it's not even costing them a dime, so do I say, gee, how nice? Or do I say, you owe me $50,000?
So the two important pieces of that. Number one is that the halacha is that parents are responsible to pay for their children's education. Grandparents are responsible, and even great-grandparents. If a parent cannot afford to, let's say in the old system, where parents hired melamdim, or following the present system we have right now, parents have to pay for their children's education. Halacha is if a parent can't afford it, the grandparents are obligated, and even great-grandparents, right? This is against the way that we've been trained ourselves to think. Halachically, it still is their responsibility. The golden years don't look so good anymore. Right? expand on that. So I would think that we have to respond differently. We have to, as we spoke with this morning, raise the stature of the of Melechus HaKodesh. I don't think that it's such a people are making financial decisions based on that. I think that many communities have put together very significant packages. And I think that if we look at where we are right now, we're so way ahead in such a short period of time where we were a few years ago, that we can look forward to that that becoming even stronger. But let's hold on that, because I want to focus on this Gemara and one other, I think, major ramification. So again, just to explain what we've accomplished so far before we finish up, Yeshua ben Gamla makes this new takana, legislation, day schools, shivot ktanot. Exactly what did he accomplish? Two ways of looking at it. One way is the way that we look at it presently. Yeshua ben Gamla established a service for all parents. Parents pay for the service. I would say grandparents, great-grandparents if necessary. If not, we as a community then pick up on it. Just to respond to President Joel, however, there's always a however. Yeah, I was waiting for the last, however, right? A parent's responsibility to pay for their children's education, Torah education, has to end sometime, right? Exactly when? So if you look at the Gemara, it says when they know Tanakh. The Gemara expected that to be probably when they were 10. When they were 10. I think that's why yeshiva stopped teaching Tanakh. So, but in the Gemara's mind, that was 10 years old, right? So other Rishonim say, and the way that we paskin is, until they know Tanakh and Gemara. What does that mean? One of the great poskim of the door, Rav Yaakov Yeshaya Blau in Yerushalayim, says that when children become independent in their study, when they can learn how to make a leining, right, that's one of the great motivations to hire a Rebbe, to teach your child how to make a leining, how to learn Gemara on their own. After that, you can then start taking some of your funding, I guess, from your tzedakah funds, right? After my child comes to a certain age, an age where he's learning, he can learn independently, and an age where I feel that he no longer needs the environment of a yeshiva. So that could be end of high school, could be after a year in Israel, could be after YU, but at some point, you have confidence in your child, then any funding towards their education, like yours, comes off my own stocker money. Right? It comes off my master sofer. Right? So you can't really charge the grandparent for the year in gross, right? But you can tell them, if you take care of your grandchild, it comes out of your master sofer. I think these two models are very instructive. Right? One model, communal, and the other is that it's still personal. It has the following ramifications. It means that halachically, if I'm correct, the Alter Rebbe is correct, that it means that communities should be starting to ask members of their community to pay for day schools before they have children. Or even when their children are very, very young, they're part of a community that has to have a day school. And even when their children are now beyond the day school years, they should still be funding the communal day school, right? Much like the Catholic approach. So it spreads, we can then have a formula that would spread tuition over many, many years. Right? Right? That kind of an idea. Schools could still maintain their independence by charging a tuition above the amount that is necessary to maintain a bare-bones school. It also, I think, has, and this I defer to the lawyers, it may have ramifications for taking tuition from as a tax deduction. Right? Because as long as we see it as paying tuition, it's not tax deductible. If it was part of a communal responsibility, right, that would tremendously ease the tuition requirement. Certainly the rabbinic briefs that would go into this would be honest and genuine in saying this is a communal responsibility. And that therefore it is and it's part of your responsibility irrespective of whether your children are attending the school or not. That's another approach to go. You're going to say something before? Go ahead.
Question. The community of Harrisburg,
Go ahead. So I would think you cannot reject the child, both purely halachically, as well as we have to be concerned about the child. I think you're right. I think at that point, the child would have the metaphor of being a yosim at that point. Right? And we couldn't. No, I would even go a step further, and this is always a point of tension that I've had with mechanchim. The school thinks, that a parent can actually pay, and the parent's not paying. Comes the first day of school. So many schools will not take the child into the classroom. I don't know. Either one. So I think that, and I've had this out with mechanchim, I think you can't do that to a child. You can't penalize a child because the parent... Now, mechanchim have told me there's no other way to get the money. The family has the money. There's no other way to get it. If they can't do it, I think that's... You can't have the child suffer because of that. We have to end up, right? We have to end. Make two quick comments, and then what were we going to say before? Yeah.
I was only going to comment to agree with you on the point you made, the reference you made to civil law, to secular law. There is, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody who wants to talk about it in detail, there's a significant tax law component to what you're saying. The tax law draws exactly this distinction that you did.
Not taxable.
That's not well known, but there is a very significant U.S. tax law corollary to everything you said. The line is drawn between where there's a personal benefit and where there's a communal benefit, and that needs to be taken into account if anybody wants to implement this on a practical level.
There's a comment back here. I think that would be heavily dependent on which model we're taking. If we take the model of that we're giving out tzedakah, then a school would have the right to say that there is a parental and a grandparent obligation. They would have the right. It may not be a wise thing to do communally. They may decide not to do that, but I think they would have the halachic right to do that. If you're looking at it from as a community school, so then it's really wide open. Then the community can decide on their own what parameters they want in order to structure the way they support their system. Yeah. All right? Now it's getting late, and I just want to thank you for the opportunity. And I think primarily we had the chance to learn together. We had the chance to see that some of the issues that we grapple with can be found so clearly in a Gemara, that the different ways of looking at the line of the sugya and the Gemara are different models that are very much part of our thinking in our society, and that we can get guidance on some of the very difficult issues that face us from the text of Chazal. Thank you very much.